leaders in China meet to map national strategy for the coming year. It's Wednesday, March 6th. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, trade talks between the United States and China may be making progress. India downplays new U.S. trade status. Indonesia and Australia make a deal. DNA testing and engineering diversity. It's all on today's VOA Asia. China's premier Li Keqiang says the world's second largest economy has a tough struggle ahead this year. As China grapples with a slowing economy and the ongoing trade dispute with the United States, it is facing unprecedented severe challenges and risks. VOA's Bill Ide has more from Beijing.
In his annual government work report to China's largely rubber-stamped National People's Congress, Li Keqiang told delegates about plans to cut taxes to boost the economy and focus on innovation. He also set Beijing's growth target for this year between 6 to 6.5%. The tone of Li's speech was sober, and he mentioned the phrase stabilize or stability more than 70 times. He talked about the need to stabilize the stock market, financial sector, unemployment, expectations, foreign and domestic investment, and of course, trade frictions with the United States.
As we pursue development this year, we will face a graver and more complicated environment, as well as risks and challenges that are greater in number and size. We must be fully prepared for a tough struggle.
Trade tensions and tariffs are adding to the challenges Beijing is facing. The United States' request to extradite tech giant Huawei's chief financial officer and concerns about the company as well as its links to China's authoritarian government are all part of that complicated environment. Still, officials in the U.S. and China are optimistic the two sides can reach a deal. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Monday that he is hopeful that in the coming days and weeks, there will be what he called a significant announcement. Speaking on the sidelines of Beijing's annual political meetings, China's Commerce Minister Zhongshan said the two countries still need to find some common ground.
At present, working teams are still continuing negotiations, as we still have a lot to do. Even more, we need China and the United States to meet halfway and work together.
During meetings of the National People's Congress this year, China is expected to pass its first foreign investment law. To support domestic companies as the economy slows, Li says China will cut company taxes and social insurance contributions by nearly $300 billion. He also says the government will lift spending and make its fiscal policy more forceful. Beijing will also increase its military spending by 7.5% this year to around $180 billion. Analysts say the actual figure is much higher, but based on the amount Beijing has disclosed, China's budget is still three times more than that of what India spends, but still far behind Washington, which spent almost $700 billion on defense last year. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
China is also expected to pass its first foreign investment law during meetings of the National People's Congress this year, a step that Beijing is taking to bridge a gap. However, analysts and observers will be watching to see what other steps the legislative body takes to shore up support for private enterprises or to further open up China's economy. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and also at the voanews.com website. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. China says tough year ahead economically. Cambodia says no release for opposition leader Kem Sokha. Facebook prohibits foreign-funded ads for Indonesia election. Official says China planning series of new moves to unify with resistant Taiwan. Indonesian art collective picked to curate prestigious document event. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more when you visit Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as a stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. India has downplayed the impact of U.S. plans to end New Delhi's preferential trade status that allows duty-free access to products worth $5.6 billion, saying that India has not assured the United States that it will provide equitable and reasonable access to its markets. U.S. President Donald Trump has directed the U.S. Trade Representative's office to remove India from a program that grants it preferential trade treatment. In 2017, India was the biggest beneficiary of the Generalized System of Preferences, which lowers duties on exports from about 120 developing countries. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about this with Phil Levy. He's a senior fellow in the global economy at the Chicago Council of Global Affairs.
I think certainly by Trump administration standards, this move against India is fairly tame. This is withdrawing a special privilege that they have been granted. So in the grand scheme of their approach to protectionism, this one is quite modest.
What does it entail?
There had been a long-standing policy that developing countries would get kind of a pass when it came to reciprocal trade liberalization. The idea was maybe a little extra market access could help them develop. This meant that the WTO allowed rich countries like the United States to offer special preferences to poorer countries, and India has been counted among those poorer countries. The Trump administration has decided it no longer wants to extend that privilege, in part because it says that India was not reciprocating by being sufficiently open to U.S. goods.
So what is it that the United States wants, and what has been the reaction from the Indian government so far?
Well, I don't know that the U.S. has put out a specific set of demands. I think it had a number of complaints about Indian practices that it couldn't get satisfaction on, so it went ahead with this withdrawal. It's not quite the same as sticking tariffs on $50 billion of goods and demanding resolution. I think what we're likely to see from India is some of the measures that they had held off on applying, such as retaliation for U.S. steel and aluminum tariffs, they probably will go ahead and do right now. I also don't think this will do anything to help the sort of closer foreign relations that the administration was seeking with its Indo-Pacific policy.
Then why do it?
I think the Trump administration has a strongly held belief that countries have been getting away with this developing country status, and it has been, you know, done for their advantage and U.S. disadvantage. And they see this as an opportunity to set that right and level the playing field, as it were.
Are there any other countries that might be facing similar situations?
Well, my understanding was at the same time that they did this with India, they did something similar with Turkey. That was not so much saying that Turkey had failed to reciprocate, but saying that Turkey had outgrown this program, that it was no longer really a developing country and therefore didn't deserve preferential treatment.
So who gets hurt and who gets helped by this?
I think in all likelihood, India will be upset that they're facing new barriers. There will be certain U.S. importers who will now face higher tariffs. Usually goods came in under GSP when there was no major American competitor, so it's very unlikely that you have American competitors sort of standing by to take advantage. So it'll be a restriction on trade. To be fair to the Trump administration, it could send a signal that these large developing countries like India need to do more to help bolster the trading system. The two things I would stress here are, on this one, it's a relatively orthodox move by the Trump administration, unlike many of their other moves. But like a lot of their other moves, it's inconsistent with some of their broader strategies. So their real twist on their whole Asia-Pacific thing was to make this the Indo-Pacific and loop India in. This is not at all helpful in that regard.
The Indian Commerce Secretary told reporters in New Delhi that India has no plans to impose retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. Despite their fast-growing political and security ties, trade tensions have been brewing between the two countries over the past year, as American businesses complain of protectionist hurdles in one of the world's fastest-growing markets. President Trump has called India a high-tariff country and repeatedly complained of high levies imposed by India on exports, such as imported whiskey and Harley-Davidson motorcycles. Happening now in Asia, a Japanese court has approved the release of former Nissan chairman Carlos Ghosn from prison on $8.9 million bail, but his detention was delayed when prosecutors filed a last-minute appeal to the court's decision. Prosecutors filed the appeal pending his trial for corporate misconduct. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Glad to have you with us as we've hit the middle of the week here on VOA Asia. In India's northern Haryana state, a campaign that aims to empower women and give them equal status in a deeply patriarchal society is encouraging residents in scores of villages to display their daughters' names outside their village homes. Anjana Pasricha visited two villages to see how this initiative is working.
After a nameplate with their daughter's name is hammered onto their gate, the family poses proudly. In a village where only a handful of girls complete school and most are married young, it inspires this father to think differently for 14-year-old Muskan.
I dream that she studies well, progresses in life, does a good job, and makes a name for herself.
The Daughter Pride Festival initiative in Muslim-dominated Patuka village in Haryana is encouraging families to treat girls on par with boys in one of the country's most backward districts. The hope? Daughters' names outside the doors will carry change inside homes still ruled by patriarchal mindsets.
I think this campaign will make them understand that the daughter is the identity of the house. People will be inspired to educate them. Those with negative thinking about this will become more positive.
In a more prosperous village, Alipur, 25 out of 700 homes now display the names of their daughters. These are the more affluent families in this Hindu-dominated village, but they usually set an example for others. This college student is one of the handful who has received a good education. She feels her name outside her parents' home sends a message.
When a passerby sees this, it will encourage them to do the same and take their thinking a step ahead.
It is not easy to convince men to come on board. But Sunil Jaglan, who initiated the campaign that the government has adopted, is optimistic that such steps will transform women's lives.
This is a mind strike. This is a symbol to make people understand that putting your caste or the man's name is not enough. The woman also lives there. She also has an equal stake in the home, in the property, in the village.
Among those who have imbibed that message is Mahesh Jangra. His home displays the name of his 10-year-old daughter. Growing up, he saw more boys than girls in his village. The reason? The number of girls had dwindled due to illegal sex-selective abortions which flourished earlier. As such campaigns make a mark, the gender ratio in Haryana has improved. And the hope is that these nameplates will herald a brighter future for these girls. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, Haryana.
Coming up, more trading between Indonesia and Australia. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Cambodian opposition leader Kem Sokha has spent more than 18 months in detention, with other opposition leaders decrying his case as politically motivated and arguing that his continued detention goes against Cambodian laws. He is not allowed to leave the immediate vicinity of his house. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a big trade deal is signed while the leaders of the world's second largest economy meet. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
Indonesia and Australia signed a multi-billion dollar trade agreement in Jakarta, Indonesia. Under the agreement, all Australian trade tariffs will be eliminated, while 94% of Indonesian duties will eventually be lifted. Simon Birmingham is Australia's Trade, Tourism and Investment Minister.
This is an historic occasion. The signing of the Indonesia-Australia Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement brings our two nations closer together than ever before.
Australia will have greater access to Indonesia's large market of 260 million people, while Australian universities, health providers and miners will also benefit from easier entry to Southeast Asia's biggest economy. Indonesia is Australia's 13th largest trading partner, with bilateral trade reaching $11.7 billion in 2017. While many economists believed the existing trade relationship had plenty of room to grow, past foreign policy differences often hindered that growth. Indonesian Trade Minister Enggartiasto Lukita called the agreement one of the brightest moments in the Indonesia-Australia relationship. The deal has been in negotiation since 2010, and Lukita said he hoped the agreement would be ratified before the end of 2019. China's annual National People's Congress meeting is underway. One of the most anticipated votes in the legislature will be on the foreign investment law, which could bring significant changes for companies trying to do business in China. The bill on the table will eliminate the requirement for foreign firms to transfer proprietary technology to Chinese joint venture partners. It also ensures that foreign investors will have the same privileges as Chinese companies in most sectors, except those placed on a so-called negative list. Zhang Yesui is the spokesperson for the National People's Congress.
Industries not on the list will be fully open, with domestic and foreign firms enjoying the same treatment. This is a fundamental change in our foreign investment management system, which will improve the openness, transparency, and predictability of the investment environment.
This year's Congress meeting takes place in the midst of trade talks between China and the U.S., and while the legal battle over Chinese telecoms giant Huawei continues. The People's Congress will vote on the new law on March 15th, the last day of its annual session. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
This news from VOA Asia. Authorities in Pakistan have detained 44 suspected militants, including two relatives of the leader of the Islamist group that India accused of plotting a suicide car bombing in the defiant Kashmir region. That deadly February 14th blast almost brought the two nuclear-armed rival nations to the brink of war. All the big stories coming away through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, simple DNA testing kits are becoming more popular and affordable. Today, genetic tests can show where your family came from, give you insight into your health, and even reveal unknown living relatives. Nastasia Jaman has the story narrated by Anna Rice.
Today, many companies around the world offer DNA testing with no need for needles or blood tests. For roughly $100, anyone can send their saliva sample to a lab and get a detailed genetic profile a month later. Sometimes the results are surprising. DC resident Jason Lambro thought he had no brothers or sisters. He got a DNA ancestry test just to learn more about his family background, but ended up finding a sibling.
And as I'm just kind of flipping through one day, saying, oh, let's see the new results of today. Dink, congratulations, you found your half-brother. And it was a bit stunning, to say the least.
Many customers are less surprised when DNA helps them figure out where their families came from. Joan Bedurtha is a doctor and geneticist. She tried all of the DNA testing companies available in the U.S. and says they showed nearly identical results. With more tests, these companies expand their database of genetic markers around the world, which gives them clearer insight into where families originated.
A lot of the tests that are done by the companies looking at ancestry are looking at something called important single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs. So they have chosen important places where we know variation occurs in different people's DNA and compare it to the pattern, say, in people from Africa or people from Eastern Europe or people from the Middle East or different Asian countries.
That helped Jana, who didn't know much about her family, just that her grandfather was born in Crimea. But the test helped her find distant relatives living in Ukraine.
This is just unbelievable. When I saw the results, I started crying. It was a big emotional shock. I thought, oh my God, all these people live there, and here I am now.
Jason Lambro was also elated to find more of his family.
This is the first time I've ever had a brother, so I've kind of gone through the range of emotions. Actually, the first email he ever sent me was, hey, little brother, and I could feel the hairs in the back of my neck stand up like, call me little, what are you talking about?
The men haven't yet met in person, but have big plans. After all, there is a lot they need to catch up on. For Nastasya Yevmen in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Studying engineering isn't just about learning, it's about using skills in the real world. But for biomechanical engineering students, it can be kind of hard to get that real-world experience. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us students at the University of the District of Columbia are able to see how their schoolwork translates to helping people.
Robert Klein is working with biomechanical engineering students at the University of the District of Columbia. He had a stroke and suffers from a chronic degenerative disc disease that makes keeping his balance difficult.
The goal is to gain new knowledge about balance and how certain training can maybe influence and improve one's balance, because ultimately we want to reduce the number of falls we see in elderly people.
With support from the National Science Foundation, engineer Lara Thompson has set up this state-of-the-art biomechanical engineering lab. It was an offer she couldn't pass up.
You know, if I build the lab, if I get the grants that we can furnish the lab and have good activities for students, then the students will come and they'll gain and they'll know what engineering is about.
UDC is a historically black university, as well as the largest public institution of higher learning in Washington, D.C.
Put your hands up and 9 degrees here.
Thompson sees a lot of promising young people here who just need some inspiration and a chance.
Many times, in particular, female students or high school students, they don't know necessarily what engineering is about. They have some ideas and potentially even stereotypes of what engineers are. And so we want to really expose them so they're more informed.
Just knowing that everyone's different and everyone needs help in different areas has really helped me. I know I want to be a doctor, so helping people is what I want to do.
There you go. Just a...
The team includes undergraduate research assistants interacting with study participants in a dynamic research lab environment. Here, as the saying goes, things get real.
You're able to see a tangible difference, and you can see how you're helping somebody. So it's not very abstract. What I'm doing, I know will help somebody. So it's rewarding.
For Thompson, it's about giving a leg up to the next generation of scientists and engineers.
So a lot of the work that they do at the university is tied to coursework. It's not very hands-on. There's more to engineering than just math, right? There's a lot of applied things we actually do in this lab so students can see right away the effects of what they do.
It's been a challenging session for Robert Klein. He's done for the day, but the team here at UDC are just getting started. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. In case you've missed part of our program or you want to hear the full-length program each and every day, find us at our website at voanews.com. Just go to our programs page, and there you'll find VOA Asia for today and many days before. You can also hear us on Facebook at VOA Asia. And for listeners in Myanmar, we're on another Facebook page. You know it as VOA Burmese. Thanks to everyone there who has listened to our program today. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, John Ellison, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a terrific day.